Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now, Iceman Insights, starring the one, the only, the Shocker, Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com, and the person my child would rather live with.
Yeah, well, thank God there is only one of him, right?
Yep, because, well, what, are we talking about me? Yes, there's only one me, for sure. I'm adjusting the microphone. This is bad timing. So, this is what are we talking about?
Wonderful preparation.
It was just supposed to be a quick little fix to lower that microphone, but yeah. then the whole righty tighty lefty loosey while I'm talking, that's it.
And it screws up the Etch a Sketch brain, and all is lost.
So, all right, 1 minute into the show, we're picking up right where we left off.
High quality radio as per usual. Not a whole lot of Iceman news to get to since our last show. Did just want to mention, as most have probably heard at this point, Terry Ficarelli, the radio broadcaster and vice president of communications for the Iceman, is no longer with the team. His contract came up and Ron Geary chose not to renew it. And that's all we're going to say about that. People have discussed it ad nauseum online already. So, yeah.
Not to mention you wrote a 5-page treatise on it. So
it was 6 pages. Thank you very much.
The best quote in Maniac Asylum history was my man Troy Seibert commenting on it, saying, Mike, earlier in section 4, paragraph 8, you referenced, oh, never mind.
Yeah, that was good. I enjoyed that too. So yeah, moving on. Also in the Iceman office, for those who haven't heard, a couple of the ticket reps, Thomas Laverne and Kyle Fernetten, are no longer part of the sales team. So for anyone who had them as their season ticket reps, if you haven't heard from the office, you might want to call and find out who your new rep is going to be. But that's all we have as far as Iceman news. Nothing else has come out in the last 2 weeks. Still just, I'm sure, working the kinks out as far as getting new Coach Pyle up and running. And I'm sure we'll start hearing more about players and affiliations and whatnot in the coming months.
You had posted it earlier. When does the protective list come out? Was that June 15th?
I think it's June 15th. You have a protected list, and then I think July 1 is the deadline for qualifying offers.
June 15th is going to be a lot like Christmas to me. I'm pretty excited with the turnover in the coaching ranks, just the horrible season, all the injuries on top of it, Coach Pyle having a 13-year career in the ECHL, still some of those players still available to him. Who does he keep and who does he cut loose?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot of names on the protected list regardless, because you can have more or less the whole team. I think it's going to be a case of you have these guys, and whether you intend to bring them back or not, you at least keep them in your property so that you have assets. And then if you choose to let them go, you can. But at the very least, you still have them kind of under your umbrella until you decide one way or the other what you're going to do. So maybe we'll see some guys left off the list that we would not necessarily think would be left off, but I think the protected list is not going to tell us a whole lot. I think it's still going to come down to just waiting and seeing who actually gets signed.
Good point. Also, you say assets, I think Steven Rickard. I don't know why my mind goes there. But anyways, Around the minors,
catching up on the playoffs in the ECHL, the conference semifinals are underway or almost over. figures, we're recording this on Tuesday, and all 4 series are still up for grabs and have games on Tuesday and Wednesday nights this week. As of now, Reading leads Florida 3-2, and the Royals host Game 6 and 7. Cincinnati leads Gwinnett 3-2, and also hosts Game 6 and 7. Out in the West, Stockton actually leads Alaska 3-2. But the Aces do host the last two games of that series, and Idaho leads Ontario 3-2, but Ontario hosts the last two games of those of that series. So
the farthest away two teams could be from each other for the ECHL finals would be Alaska and Gwinnett.
Florida.
Oh my gosh,
that would be epic travel, would it not?
That would be bigger than Boston, Vancouver in the NHL a few years back.
Yeah, that's. I'm sure that every team in the East is probably rooting for Alaska to lose, just because they don't want to have to travel there if they do make it to the finals. So, that's where things stand in the ECHL. Over in the CHL, the championship is underway. It is the top-seeded Allen Americans against the number two Wichita Thunder. In the semis, Allen beat Missouri in a seven-game series, and Wichita swept Fort Worth. So, Todd Robinson and the Allen Americans continue to chug right along.
Todd Robinson, number one star of the week.
Was he now?
Yes, he was.
Wow.
Two goals and plus one.
Yeah, and he's like plus nine in the playoffs or something. Where'd that come from?
He'll tell you. It's the team around him.
Yeah. There's a lot of truth to that.
We pulled him down. We held him down to that negative
462. Yeah. Otherwise known as Brian Patafi's IQ.
Ooh, and here we go.
Yeah, that's
five
right.
5.5 minutes in.
That's right. I heard him talking about his man games loss total equaling my weight a few weeks ago. So I'm getting him back early now.
And you got a whole list of them over there, too.
Yeah. Also wanted to mention in the AHL, the playoffs are now underway. They're in the first round up there, which is best of five in the AHL in the first round, and then they do best of seven after that. The Peoria Rivermen did not qualify, but the Springfield Falcons are alive. They are actually up 2-0 over the Manchester Monarchs, or the Manchester, depending on how you want to. The emphasis is on the wrong syllable. So Manchester is the AAA affiliate of the Los Angeles Kings. So, Springfield, hopefully they'll continue onward. They've got several guys that spent some time with the Icemen this season on their roster. So, good luck to them. And with our minor league update done, now we move on to the granddaddy of them all.
Toronto.
The Stanley Cup playoffs. This is the first time since 1994-95 that all of the original six teams are in the playoffs.
I did not know that.
And I believe that's because it's the first time since 1994-95 that your Leafs have been in the playoffs.
No, the last time we were in the playoffs was 2003.
Before the last lockout, right?
Before the last lockout. And we were the only team in the NHL not to make the playoffs since the previous lockout.
But between the two lockouts?
Yes.
Wow.
So, and I only get sex when the Leafs are in the playoffs. So we're ending a couple of major droughts here.
So what you're saying is in about 9 months, we're going to have a little brother or sister for Ivy?
Yeah. It also makes you question where Ivy came from.
So. Yeah. Interesting. Was that the man crush? Did he have something to do with that?
I don't
know. So anyway.
Whoever it was didn't pay any of the darn bills, that's for sure.
So in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, we want to throw out our predictions. In the Eastern Conference, the first series is the number one Pittsburgh Penguins against the 8th seed New York Islanders. What's your take?
I'm going Pittsburgh.
No kidding, really?
Yeah, really.
How many games?
Dude, I had that on another piece of paper.
Oh,
it's on
boy.
NHL. I think I have them in five.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I think my first instinct was Penguins in four, but then I thought, well, they probably aren't going to see the Islanders as a legitimate threat, so they may have a letdown game somewhere in that series. So I figure I'll give the Isles a game just perhaps naively. But
well, to be honest, I thought at the end there they kind of fell apart, but the Islanders have played some really good hockey, and I think that is a team that is on the up and up, and
yeah.
I can see them contending for a cup next year.
Yeah, they're definitely moving in the right direction.
But they're just going to run up against a buzzsaw in the Pittsburgh Penguins. So
yep.
Especially if Crosby gets healthy sometime during the first round.
Indeed, yeah. Another series, the 2-seed Montreal Canadiens against the 7-seed Ottawa Senators, an all-Canada series.
I have, it's also all Northeast Division series, too.
True.
I think this is the hardest game to pick in the in the first round here, and I am going with Montreal. But it would not surprise me at all if Ottawa wins, and I know a lot of people that are picking Ottawa.
I am too. I'm going Montreal in seven, but I won't be surprised one bit if Ottawa wins that one.
Yeah, I had Montreal in six.
That's going to be a good series. The number three seed division champion... Washington Capitals against the 6-seed New York Rangers.
See, and you're one of those crybabies that doesn't like the whole new realignment thing and everything else. It is going to be so much better next year. Two divisions, top three teams from each one of those divisions. None of this silly Southeast division gets an automatic number three. It's going to be awesome.
Here's the difference to me. People who have their favorite team in the Eastern Conference like the realignment because it eliminates this whole Southeast Division mess. People whose favorite team is in the Western Conference don't like realignment because the Western Conference has not been broken. What? The Western Conference playoff races
have
been great.
It has nothing to do with being... It's going to be even better.
I don't think
so. It's going to be even better.
I don't think so. Plus, I don't like that we're losing Detroit because I like having a team that I can hate. Although now I have the Blackhawks, too.
but Detroit has been trying to get out of the West for 20 years.
That's true.
So,
and we have to placate the almighty Red Wings.
Yes, we kind of do.
So, anyway.
But regardless, but you're getting Winnipeg. And you're getting Winnipeg in. Dude, have you watched a Winnipeg game?
Yes, I have, actually.
That is the... You want to talk about hockey town, you want to talk about Toronto as the center of the hockey world. There are no better fans. There is no better hockey experience than the Winnipeg Jets in their own barn. That is awesome.
I agree that place is crazy. But the problem is, when Winnipeg goes on the road, that doesn't sell out barns like a team like Detroit
does. But they're up and coming, too. They got the young Schlafly kid. There's another butchered last name for me, who's been on the team twice. He's played his max nine games, and they've sent him back down to develop a little bit more. They got last year's first-round pick. They're up and coming, man. They're going to be solid.
And any team with Dustin Byfuglien.
Yes, he is a Byfuglien. There is no doubt about it. And Evander Kane, he is my third favorite player in the whole entire league. And yeah, Evander Kane.
Nazem Kadri.
No, I love Kadri. And we actually call him Nazim. Because it has more of that Disney kind of Aladdin. He's special kind of
feel. Does he grant you three wishes
Nazim
if he gets a hat trick?
Nazim the Dream. But no, Jerome Iginla, number one. Henrik Zetterberg, number two. Evander Kane, number three. Evander Kane can score, he can pass, and he will beat the hell out of you, too. So.
I actually have a Jerome Iginla jersey.
Oh,
awesome. I've always enjoyed watching him play, too. And I like the Flames red jerseys with the black C. I dig those, so I have an Iginla jersey. But anyway, we digress.
As per usual.
Yeah. So the Caps-Rangers series, who you got?
I don't really believe in the Rangers. I think they're up and coming, but I'm going Capitals.
Really?
Yep.
I'm going with the upset, and then I'm taking Rangers in six, just because I'm not sold at all on the Capitals. They did right the ship down the stretch to win the division, but I'm not sold on them being a legitimate threat, and I think the Rangers will find a way because... Henrik Lundqvist.
Yeah, I can see Henrik Lundqvist. Now, is Mark Stahl coming back anytime soon?
I haven't heard an update lately. I don't know.
He took the puck to the mouth,
right? Yeah, and that's scary stuff.
Yep.
So the last series in the East is an original six matchup, the number four Boston Bruins and the number five Toronto Maple Leafs.
We're back, baby!
Who you got?
I got Boston sweeping us.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
And again, I didn't even want to play this season. I was hoping that the lockout would go the whole entire season because my Leafs have some up-and-coming young kids, and I wanted us to be forced to play them in the AHL for the whole entire season. Nazem Kadri, Matt Fratton, Jake Gardner on the D line, and I just wanted them to get that experience. So, and they've played well. We've put it all together, but we don't have enough talent yet, and no playoff experience. And I just think, and Tuukka Rask always kills us. Now, I think we do have a chance. I think our speed and that Boston D pairings, that's our advantage right there. So. We got a shot, but no, I got Boston in four.
I got Boston in six. I think the Leafs will put up a fight, if nothing else, because they will ride the wave of emotion at home. I think because it's the first time in a decade that they've had home games in Toronto during the playoffs, it's going to be crazy. And I think they may, the kids may ride that energy. I don't think they're going to win the series. And if they do somehow win the series, they're not going to move past the next round. But I think they can make it a series, but I do think Boston's going to win.
Any Leaf fan that has watched this team for years knows that when they have big games and the ACC's crazy, they play like crap.
They melt down.
So, and like last year we were in playoff contention. We had Matt Sundin night. We, against Montreal, raised Sundin to the rafters. We're all crying in the family room. And they got destroyed 5-0 and went on a horrendous funk that drove us out of the playoffs. And that's pretty much what I expect from games 3 and 4.
That's because everyone was worried about Matt Sundin hanging up in the rafters.
Yeah, well, he the man.
So moving on to the West, we have the top-seeded Chicago Blackhawks, who I think lost, what, 6 games in regulation?
Something like that. And they had a lot of injuries, too.
Yeah. They are taking on the 8th-seed high-budget Minnesota Wilds.
Yes. One of those small-market teams that can't survive. We need to have another lockout.
Yeah.
We're going to spend $200 million on two players.
Yeah.
So,
what do you think? Sweep?
Chicago, 5 games. Minnesota played really well early on. The Danny Heatley thing, who is probably the funniest guy to be made fun of. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the Danny Heatley YouTube videos and the fake Danny Heatley Twitter page. They're just funny. He is a guy that people love to hate, but he's missing from that lineup. And John Buchagras had posted some numbers. They're scoring 1 goal less a game. They're like averaging 1.8 goals a game since Heatley left, and they're struggling. They don't have enough offense yet, so Chicago in 5.
That's what I got. I got Hawks in 5. I wouldn't be shocked if it's a sweep, but I think Minnesota has enough talent to win a game. I think it'll be a case of Chicago wins both at home, and then they get a split in Minnesota, and then the Hawks put it away at home in game 5. A potential upset. A lot of people I'm seeing are picking number 7 Detroit over the 2-seeded Anaheim Ducks.
That's a lot of people that know nothing about hockey and really haven't watched any hockey in probably 15 years.
They just figure it's Detroit, so they'll win.
I guess. Detroit, their biggest problem is their third line, Darren Helm, Todd Bertuzzi, Michael Samuelson, they've been injured all year. That's why they barely made it into the playoffs. So it's all Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk. They got a lot of cool young rookies up and coming. That Corey Emerton kid, if you haven't seen him yet, oh my gosh, he's like Dylan Clark. He's 6'4", and he flies and he shoots, but they're just not developed yet. And in the last 2 years, losing Lidstrom and Brian Rafalski and replacing them with Ian White
and Carlo Koliakovo, otherwise known as Ole Splody Bones because he can't stay healthy.
Yeah, also known as former Toronto Maple Leaf property.
Yeah,
from the dark years.
Former Blues property.
Yes,
too.
I know. No, Anaheim.
Yeah, I got Ducks in 7. I won't be surprised if it ends sooner than that. But
I have Ducks in 4.
Whoa, going with the sweep.
Yep.
Wow. We got the 3-seed Vancouver Canucks against the number 6 San Jose Sharks, the favorite team of one Brad Perkins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a Sharks fan.
Well, I got Vancouver beating them in 5.
I got Canucks in 7 just because I'm not sold on either one of these teams, and I figure they'll fight it out till the end and somebody will have to win by default.
A little tease, I am sold on Vancouver.
Really?
The biggest thing is Ryan Kessler getting healthy. He only played about 8 to 12 games.
It's true.
Then they also made the big trade deadline deal for Derek Waugh out of Dallas, who is
he's
solid
good
two-way center. So now you've got the Twins. I forget what Johnny Kell's nickname for them is, the Barbie Twins or the Sisters. They got the Sisters on the first line. You've got Kessler centering that second line. You got Derek Waugh centering a checking line. Man, that's a lot of talent up the middle.
But what about goaltending?
Dude, I'm a huge Roberto Luongo fan. I think he's solid. Everyone forgets that this guy was up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup Finals against Boston, and all the great media experts were talking about how there's no doubt this is a sweep. It may go 5. And then they have a bunch of injuries. Mason Raymond gets his coccyx broke when he gets Seidenberg ransom.
I'm sorry, what was that?
His coccyx.
I'm not sure that's how you pronounce it.
Whatever. It's Kakix. I learned it from Napoleon Dynamite. I don't even know where it is, but I just... But whenever someone breaks something in their backside, it's their Kakix. But Dan Hamihuis goes down, and then Tim Thomas stands on his head, and it goes seven games, and now all of a sudden Roberto Luongo is a horrible goaltender. So, no, they're fine. They're gonna.
But do you think they'll ride Luongo or Schneider?
I think Schneider's hurt, and I think Luongo's going to start the first two, and then
if he plays well enough.
Well, and if he gets hot, that's fine. But even if he goes up 2-0 and Schneider's healthy, I think they will put Schneider in and just say, "Lou, you did a good job. Be ready to go just in case." Yeah, and I honestly think those two guys get along really well. I think the media is crazy, but I think those two guys get along really well. They both want the net, but I think they like each other and they work hard together. And I think it's something they can. It's a strength for them, not a weakness.
So wait a minute. The takeaway from this is that the Canadian hockey media is crazy.
Yeah, what a shock!
Wow, breaking news here on Iceman Insights. All right, and our final series in the West is the number 4 seed St. Louis Blues and the defending champs, the number 5 seed Los Angeles Kings.
St. Louis played a lot better. It's amazing what can happen when you trade for a couple of defensemen that can actually play defense in Bomeister and Leopold.
Yeah,
but
they are solid.
I have the LA Kings in 7.
I got Blues in 7. But that's.
I think we're sharing a brain.
I think it's.
Was it 51-49? Yeah. But then your heart was responsible
so,
for those
yeah.
other 2%.
Well, the Kings have owned the Blues lately.
Yeah, 2 years they have not
right.
beat them.
But I just have this feeling that the Blues are hotter going into the playoffs. Brian Elliott is playing lights out. And I think if he can continue that, the Blues win the series. If he reverts to the Brian Elliott that flamed out in the playoffs last year, then the Kings are going to win it, and it won't even go 7. But maybe it's just because I'm a Blues fan, but I'm leaning toward the Blues finally getting over the hump with the Kings. But one way or the other, this is going to be a brutal series. These are two big physical teams. They're going to be fun games to watch. And while fights are not particularly common in the playoffs, we might see some in this one.
TJ Oshie is supposed to be back for game 1.
Yes, Oshie is coming back, and Barrett Jackman is coming back too. He's missed a couple games. He blocked a shot and had a hurt foot, but he's coming back too. So the Blues are about as healthy as they can be. It's just a matter of can they score enough goals to offset, because they're not going to give many up. Defensively, they're stout. As long as Elliott just doesn't flame out again, they're not going to give up more than 1 or 2 goals a game. But the question is, can they score enough?
That is the question.
That's
for
ultimately
sure.
the question.
Yes, that is ultimately the question.
I think
so.
As John Madden said in football one time, the team that scores the most is the team that's going to win. So that applies to pretty much any sport except, what, golf? That's not a sport.
Oh, here we go again.
It's a game, not a sport. There we go. Exactly, Chad Burley.
So our next segment, our best segment, you can enjoy 3 minutes of neither one of us talking. Shockers, Hockey, Rock Song of the Week.
All right, with this segment, occasionally I like to introduce folks to something a little bit new. I've already featured the Arrogant Worms and the Jason Lee McKinney Band, not exactly household names around here. This week I'm going to introduce something else that people probably don't know. A couple weeks ago on the 19th of April, Here Come the Mummies played the Victory Theater here in Evansville. It's a gimmick band in that they all perform wearing mummy costumes, and part of it is so that the members can maintain anonymity because they are all signed to other record labels in Nashville. They're based out of Nashville.
Wow.
So they're all guys that are in other bands or performers and under contract to record labels, but they came together on the side, started performing as Here Come the Mummies, and they kind of rotate in and out. The costume allows them to change members from show to show if they need to, too, depending on who's available. It's a kind of a comedy funk band. A lot of their songs are kind of adult-oriented as far as a lot of innuendo and sexual jokes and whatnot. I know.
Disgusting.
Yes. Contributing to the downfall of American society. They've been featured a lot on Bob and Tom.
And Steven Rickard's testicles. No innuendo there.
Yeah, that's just direct. Wow. Speaking of that, they actually,
well, no.
The Mummies actually have a song called Single Entendre, where you don't beat around the bush. You just get right to the point. That was a nice single entendre. So anyway, their musical style is great. It's kind of like an Earth, Wind, and Fire style. There's a lot of horn section, a lot of percussion and whatnot. And they are really fantastic live. The show was awesome. I mention this because their sixth album called Cryptic comes out on May 14th. And right now, if you go to their website, herecomethemummies.com, and pre-order the CD, they actually will give you a free digital download of the album now, before it actually comes out as a CD. So that's pretty cool. The song that I'm going to play now, this is a track from the new album. And if I were still doing the music for the Iceman, I would probably use this as a warm-up song for the pregame warm-ups, because it's got good energy, and I love the lyric. It's got a line in the chorus that says, "I'll unleash so much fury that the devil better run." That's a good line. Yeah. So this is Here Come the Mummies, Devil Better Run.
It's in my blood, I got the chemical, so now away we go. Tune me in, I am the frequency, the waves are taking me. Live it up every single moment, time kills the vital potion, sinking deep in the ocean of an endless dream. I'm burning up the night, brighter than the sun.
We are back. Iceman Insights 96.9, The Music Bomb, Michael Shockley, The Dirty D, Iceman, News, Notes, everything else.
Nonsense.
Nonsense. That's it.
Shenanigans.
So, shenanigans.
Steven's testicles.
Yes. Single innuendos.
Yes.
And Chad Burley in studio.
Say hi, Chad.
Hi, Chad.
Very good. It's like a trained monkey. All right.
Wow.
Maybe he's not trained. He's just a monkey.
Silly season. You know what my plan was? I was going to read the article that you read, and then I was going to steal all your key points.
Wait a minute. You had a plan? Didn't actually come to fruition,
yeah,
obviously.
I had a plan, and it involved reading and preparation.
And that was way too much.
Yeah, and so...
Couldn't handle it.
I never made it past the funny thought process,
gotcha.
Which is pretty much the story of my life.
Yeah, I don't think that's a plan. That's just an idea.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Got it.
So anyway.
I think it's just a twitch.
Silly Season is the annual exploration of what the heck's going to happen in the minors.
And very impressed with the Maniacs Asylum, where they have just gone full bore into complete and utter irrationality. It's just fantastic. I have a source of a source. Sam Wilder, I think, had the second best quote in Maniacs Asylum history, where he's talking about an ex-girlfriend's cousin, sister-in-law's mom that says there's some good merchandise on discount at the igloo.
Somewhere in there was like a twice removed.
Just ridiculous.
What does that even mean when you're twice removed?
I don't know.
You hear that. I don't have a clue what that means. I don't know if that means they've been excommunicated from the family twice.
I don't know.
They're that annoying, crazy cousin that nobody can stand.
I think that my brother-in-law is about ready to be twice removed from his family, but that's a whole other story.
So, expansion, teams moving, folding, changing leagues, changing affiliations, all that jazz. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's happened over the past few weeks is when a lot of it is broken. First off, we'll start in the ECHL. We thought the big problem in the E was going to be with the Elmira Jackals. There was a big mess over there involving the guy that owned the team was going through bankruptcy and hadn't paid back taxes, and they were going to court over it, and they had a potential buyer for the arena and the team, and it was a whole big mess, and it was looking like we might not have the Elmira Jackals anymore. And then at the last minute, basically before the ECHL said, listen, you got to come to an agreement or you're not in the league next year. They work something out. So the Jackals have new owners. It is a local group and they own both the arena and the team. So things seem to have sorted out there in Elmira. So that's good. The bad news is totally out of the blue, about a week after Elmira got all sorted out, the Trenton Titans announced that they were ceasing operations. The announcement was made on April 23rd. And it generally was not expected. They cited financial problems, but they did not blame low attendance, even though the owner had gone on record as saying they wanted 5,500 a game, and this past season they averaged 2,578.
That really shocked me when I heard that news, because they have been pretty much the cornerstone of the ECHL for much of its reign.
And the league offices are in Trenton. So you got to think eventually a team will go back there, but it might not be under that ownership, and they won't have a team next year. But who knows what'll happen beyond that? I got to think that's a big enough market with enough hockey history that someone will put a team there. But it sounds like the ownership group that was at the helm is probably done. So we'll see what happens. The interesting thing, how that affects the Icemen, is what the divisional alignment is going to look like in the Eastern Conference next season. The Atlantic Division only had four teams. With Trenton out, they only have three, Reading, Elmira, and Wheeling. So the Icemen's division, which had five teams, you got to think one of the teams from our division may be going over to the Atlantic. The question is who? And I would think the two prime candidates would be Toledo or Cincinnati. But one way or the other, the Ohio rivalry is getting broken up. And either Fort Wayne or the Icemen are losing their closest geographic rival. Because if Toledo...
Well, and same with Kalamazoo.
Yeah, Kalamazoo is close to Toledo, too. But Toledo is the closest team to Fort Wayne. Cincinnati is the closest team to Evansville. So one way or the other, something's going to get screwed up there.
What about the possibility of the ECHL following in the brilliance of Gary Bettman and realigning just to... two divisions.
That's what I was thinking they might do. Geographically, it's hard to see how it would fit because there's such a from north to south, the five teams that are in the South Division are well removed from all the northern teams that are in the North and the Atlantic Division. So I guess they could do that, but you've got eight teams that would be in the North and only five in the South. I don't know if they would want that big of a disparity in divisions. Now, granted, they've had a big disparity in conferences, but that's a little different scenario. So I don't know how they'll do it. It's going to be interesting to see because none of the teams that are in the Atlantic would really fit with the Southern teams. Wheeling is the closest of those three to our division, but Reading and Elmira are no closer to Gwinnett than any of us are.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're going to do. It's going to be interesting.
All I know is probably the worst job in America may be being the scheduler.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be really awkward, I think, setting it all up. But we'll see what happens. I'm sure we'll find out within the next month or two, because they usually put the schedule out in June. So we're not going to have to wait long to find out how this is all going to play out. Also in the realm of the ECHL, we've talked about it before, about the potential of the E joining Indianapolis for the 2014-2015 season. So not this coming season, but the season after that. And there's been a lot that's broken on that in the last few weeks. On April 4th, David Minion from the Peoria Journal-Star, in discussing the situation in Peoria, which we'll get to in a minute, said that Indy is a done deal according to, quote, ECHL sources. He did say it was
Sam Wilder's
yeah, second cousin twice removed.
Cousins.
Yeah. He said it was not ECHL Commissioner Brian McKenna, but when he asked McKenna about it, McKenna would not deny it. So that was the first thing that it sounds like Indy's definitely said. And then about a week ago on April 20th, the Indianapolis Business Journal, which is just blowing the Indianapolis Star's doors off when it comes to covering this, because the Star doesn't seem to understand that hockey exists in Indy. The Indianapolis Business Journal said that the State Fairgrounds, which obviously is where the Coliseum is in Indy that is being renovated, they want a pro team as the marquee attraction for that building when it reopens after this renovation is complete, and it's going to reopen in 2014-15. The IBJ also said that the ECHL does have an interested ownership group, a group of people that went from Indy out to the ECHL All-Star game this year to meet people and see the product and get to know basically what they could be getting into. And the IBJ also said that the Scott family, which owns the Indiana Ice in the USHL, the junior team in Indy, they are not involved in this pro venture, and they actually want to continue operating the junior team. To that end, the Pan Am Plaza, which is where they've been playing a lot of their games and practicing with the Coliseum closed, the Indiana World Skating Academy basically managed and ran the facility. They pulled out. They said, we're done, we're closing the building. And then a few days later, the ice actually stepped up.
I told you that thing will last throughout
forever.
Humanity.
The ice are going to actually put money into it and try to renovate it and add
seating. I told you. Every time they say we're going to close it, they never close it.
Yeah. But this is the first time.
I'm right again.
This is
without any conditions, too.
This is the first time, though, that they actually got to the point of saying it's closed. They put out a press release and said, it's done. We're over. This building is no more. And then 2 days later, the ice step up. And they're not actually owning it. They haven't bought it. They've just struck a deal with the people that do own the property to manage and improve the facility.
That's awesome.
So what they've said is they're going to manage it for this coming season. Beyond that, they don't have a deal. There's nothing guaranteed. So who knows what's going to happen? I don't know if they will actually stick around and try to compete with a pro team at the Coliseum. There's only going to be one team playing at the Coliseum, and it's going to be the pro team, it sounds like. But if that happens, it sounds like Paul Scott is prepared to keep operating the ice downtown with some games at Pan Am and some games at the Bankers Life Fieldhouse where the Pacers play. So we'll see what happens there, but I think pro hockey is definitely going to return to Indy. It's just a matter of whether or not they're going to be the only game in town. So
that would be awesome, and that would be really cool if they keep the ice there as well.
Yeah.
I like that USHL development program, and John Carlson, defenseman for the Washington Capitals, mm-hmm. first-round pick out of the Indianapolis Ice, and so I hope they keep it.
It would be nice. I just hope that one doesn't cannibalize the other. You don't want to see if both of them are there, can the market support it to where one of them at least succeeds, or will it shoot both of them in the foot? So we'll see. In other ECHL news for this coming season, the ECHL is rumored to be adding Rapid City and Allen from the CHL. Supposedly, that is going to be announced at the end of the playoffs. And this information comes from Comets fan Don Brecht, so take it as you wish.
That's the guy with the goal light.
With the goal light, yes.
Yeah. So that's where we're getting our information now?
That's our
goal light dome guy?
It's not just him.
Oh, when's that Real Men of Genius coming out?
Ooh, I got to make a note of that.
Yeah, make a note.
Good, yeah. I don't know if I want to do it. Do I want to use the word genius to describe anyone who's affiliated with the Comets?
That's a point. That is a good point.
Real men of sub genius. Then we'd have to re-record every. Oh no, that's too much work.
That's another 7 hours.
You can't even go from idea to plan, let alone fruition.
Well, that's 7 hours of you listening to every horrible take.
Yeah,
just so that we keep the first one and say that was as good as it was.
As good as we can do.
Yeah,
boy. That information's coming from Don Brecht, but he says he gets it. He's getting it from an ECHL GM, and he's not talking about the Fronkies and Fort Wayne. So I don't know who
he knows.
I thought
he was getting it from some lady from her Twitter account. Or is that some other rumor that I was reading?
I'm glad you said from her Twitter account and didn't just stop at getting it from some lady. Single entendres, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. No. Don's cool. That would be interesting. We've been wondering about the CHL and the possibility of that whole thing coming over to the ECHL, and whether owners have that kind of money or not. But
there's a whole lot of smoke over there.
Yeah, but now St. Louis joins the CHL next year.
Yes,
so kind of interesting if those two leave, but then you got other franchises popping up.
There's a whole lot of problems over there. One thing to keep in mind with the idea of Allen and Rapid City coming over is if Allen comes over and the Americans decide they want to keep Todd Robinson. The Icemen still have his ECHL rights, so we could use that asset to get something of value back in a trade.
Yeah.
If they want to keep Todd Robinson. The way he's playing.
Because
for
them, of all those assets that we've traded away from all the other deals we've gotten.
Yeah.
So.
We've traded away everything except Steven Rickard's testicles.
Yes. We're keeping those. Those are our assets.
Beyond Allen and Rapid City, I think the only other teams in the CHL that the E would even consider bringing in would be Missouri, Wichita, and Tulsa. But it sounds like Tulsa, if they leave the C, is going to go juniors. They're talking about the North American Hockey League, which is the Tier 2 Junior A. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the CHL. They've got all kinds of problems. The Quad City and Bloomington are both under control of the league because of ownership and management issues. The
what a surprise.
They say that Quad City is returning. They haven't committed to anything about Bloomington.
I am surprised about that. Oh, no, that Bloomington. Yeah.
Bloomington, yeah. Bloomington with Sandy Hunnewell, the former Muskegon Blizzard or whatever
that we stole their jerseys for our present jerseys for the Icemen.
Yeah.
And she put her son in the Michigan Blizzard days. He played third line, checking line, little Billy.
And then he was in the front office.
And then when they moved up to the CHL, he was the GM until he ran into the ground in 2 months.
That was a mess. So, Bloomington does not have an arena lease for next season, so they may not come back. But it sounds like the league is prepared to keep operating Quad City, which is surprising. And as you mentioned, they are adding two expansion teams for next season, the St. Charles Chill, which is a suburb of St. Louis, and the Brampton Beast, which is Brampton, Ontario, a suburb of Toronto.
Explain to me this travel.
Nasty. Terrible.
How is this even possible?
I think it's the CHL grasping at straws, trying anything to stay afloat. They're adding teams wherever they can find people. Even if it doesn't make any geographic sense.
So you think
the
CHL is going to underwrite some of their travel expenses?
Who knows? They may or may not. I don't know that they would do that, but I think it's just they're just throwing teams anywhere they can throw teams in the hopes of keeping the league alive. And it sounds like Brampton's off to a decent start. I wonder how well they can really draw in that market.
That's a good market.
But minor pro is different than juniors. I think junior would do better there, but who knows? Maybe they'll do okay.
Juniors was there.
Yeah, exactly. The Brampton Battalion. And they are moving, which is why the arena is available for a CHL team to come in. So,
right.
I don't know how...
But nothing fires up a fan base more than losing a team and getting an opportunity to get it back.
That's true.
And part of it, too, is just finances and economy and everything else. But, Winnipeg moved to Phoenix, and then when they got that, an opportunity to get that Atlanta franchise, even if it meant ridiculous travel at the NHL level,
it was
and getting a really crappy team. And that place that they had to sell out for them to, the ownership said, we will make this move, but we need 12,000 season ticket holders, and you must commit to 5 years.
Yeah.
And they were sold in hours.
Yeah, they made it happen.
So there is something about getting your team taken away from you and then getting second chance.
Very true. So things are looking pretty good in Brampton, at least for the short term. The question, the big question mark, is about St. Charles. Right now, that franchise appears to be completely DOA. They have not announced anything about tickets. Their Twitter account has been quiet for over a month, and their Facebook account has completely disappeared. They took it down. And apparently there was a few people saying on hockey message boards that they've called the number that is supposedly the front office and gotten nothing in response.
Sounds like we're going to have to get the man crush, Matty Spaeth, do a little detective work for us.
There you go, yeah. So things not looking good in St. Charles. The CHL has also talked about possibly adding an expansion team in Casper, Wyoming. Yeah. The building there, there's only one arena in Casper, and it does not currently have an ice plant, but apparently the city is working on getting the financing to put ice in. Sounds like it's not going to happen for this coming season, but it might happen for 2014.
That sounds like a great bus ride. Brampton, Ontario, Canada to Casper, Wyoming.
Then you can go down to Arizona and then catch Fort Worth on your way back. Yeah.
They're going to be changing tires on the road. Well, guys, we reached our 15,000 miles. Yeah. We're going to have to pull over here and change the tires out.
Very good. Yeah, so that's the end of the CHL update. In the AHL, it is worth mentioning the Houston Aeros, who are owned by the Minnesota Wild, have been moved to Des Moines, Iowa. They will become the Iowa Wild. This is not an indictment of Houston as a hockey market. The Aeros, actually, the original Aeros were in the World Hockey Association for 6 years in the 70s, and Gordie Howe played for them. Yep.
And one of the coolest jerseys of all times.
Yes. The Aeros name was brought back in 1994 in the IHL, the original IHL, and then when that league folded, they moved to the AHL and have been there since. They drew well. They were seventh in the league in attendance at almost 6,800 a game this past season. The reason why the Houston Aeros are no more is because the arena, the Toyota Center in Houston, it's the only building in Houston that can host professional hockey. And the arena is run by the guy that owns the Houston Rockets NBA team. And he doesn't want a hockey team in his building anymore. He thinks he can make more money on the facility by using those dates for concerts and whatnot. So he basically strong-armed the Minnesota Wild into moving the team. He threatened to raise, and this is, I'm not sure if this is 100% true, but the report I saw online was that he threatened to raise their rent to $42,000 a game.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's, considering the fact that the Icemen, the Ford Center deal for the Icemen is $10,000 a game. $42,000 a game.
Yep.
So they basically forced them out of the market and said, we don't want you anymore. Go find somewhere else to operate your business. So that's what the Wild did. So the Iowa Wild will be in the
Have you ever been to
AHL.
Des Moines, Iowa?
I haven't been to Des Moines. I've been to Iowa, and it's a lot of nothing.
Des Moines, Iowa, one of the coolest towns I have ever been to.
Really?
College town, just awesome.
Hmm.
But yeah, you drive through a lot of mud and nothingness. and then we pulled into Des Moines, Iowa, and it was cool.
Huh.
So That would be a good place for a hockey club.
Well, they've had hockey in the past, and they've supported other things. They've had the Iowa Barnstormers arena football team was a famous arena football team that had the awesome helmets that had the fighter jet pilot goggles on the helmets. It was pretty cool.
Who was the referee? He reffed us a lot earlier in the season, the redhead.
Boy, I don't know. I don't remember who
Dude,
had
you
red
have
hair.
Stats on referees.
I don't pay attention to their hair, though.
They call him Red, but I can't remember his name. When he was
Carrot Top.
Yeah, when he was, no.
Conan O'Brien.
Shut up. Anyways, you're no help. You are unprepared. Let me carry the radio show
Well,
here.
I had an idea.
Yeah, geez.
I had a plan to categorize the officials by their hair color, but it never happened.
So I got you in here, and I got the Iceman's official score. No one can give me a referee name for the six referees we had all season long.
That's because...
But anyways, we went out to dinner after one of the games, which I had to kind of nip short because he's a pretty good-looking dude, and he's got red hair, and my wife is getting all googly-eye on me, so we had to put an end to that. But anyways... he talked about that Iowa team. He's been out there and reffed out there in the past, mm-hmm. and they had the strip-a-thon where during the intermission, they put one of their icicle girls in a chair out at center ice, and then they pick someone from the crowd, and he's got to go out there and do like a strip dance, strip tease to their version of the icicle, and then they win all kinds of prizes and stuff. And he says it is the funniest, coolest hockey things he has ever seen in his entire life. He says it is a lot of fun.
You realize this is going to happen here now. You've mentioned this on the air, which means Brian Vall is going to make it happen for next season.
That's what we do. We try not to tell people that we're actually programming their minds, though, Mike. They're just supposed to let that slide in.
And you have to program other people's minds because programming your own doesn't work so hot.
No, nor the microphones or my laptop.
So anyway, moving on past the Houston-Des Moines thing. The last thing in the AHL to mention is the biggest news perhaps for the Icemen. The Peoria Rivermen, as we mentioned several shows ago, that the future of the Peoria Rivermen was in doubt. Well, now it's really in doubt because the Rivermen have been sold by the Blues to the Vancouver Canucks. In follow-up to that, the Blues have signed a new three-year affiliation deal with the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves will retain independent ownership, so it's just a straight-up affiliation. It has no, the Blues do not own or operate the Wolves at all. The Wolves were affiliated with Vancouver, and their ECHL affiliate was the Kalamazoo Wings. No word yet on how this is going to affect the Icemen. As far as Peoria, their future is totally up in the air. The Canucks want to move their AHL club, currently the Rivermen, to Abbotsford, British Columbia, which is out near Vancouver. But the problem is Abbotsford currently has a team, the Abbotsford Heat, which are owned by the Calgary Flames. And the Flames don't want to go anywhere because they have the sweetheart deal of all sweetheart deals. They have a guarantee from the city that any of their operating losses will be covered by taxpayer money.
Nice.
Yeah. So over the last, or the first three seasons of operation, they don't have numbers for this past season, this was their fourth year. Over the first three seasons of operation, the city of Abbotsford paid the Calgary Flames more than $3 million total in order to keep the Heat there.
That is a community committed to hockey.
Yes, and $3 million Canadian is like $42 American. So that tells you how much this team is worth to them.
They might have had to fire a couple of Mounties.
So, yeah, the Flames don't want to go anywhere, which is causing problems for Vancouver. So now Vancouver is looking at potentially staying in Peoria, at least for next season, while they can figure out a way to buy Calgary out of Abbotsford. The problem is they want Peoria to give them a sweetheart deal, too. They basically want the same thing that Calgary is getting in Abbotsford. Right. And Peoria, understandably, said, uh-uh. So there's no telling what's going to happen with Peoria. Sounds like Vancouver is also looking at the Seattle area and Utica, New York, which has a history of minor league hockey. And Utica is where Calgary was supposedly looking to possibly move their club if they decided to give up their lease, or if Vancouver ponied up enough money to convince them to give up their lease. So who knows what's going to happen? Peoria may end up, or Vancouver's AHL team may go dark for a season and then sort things out for 2014. One way or the other, they have to make a decision. The AHL has set a deadline of May 13th for when they must decide what they're going to do.
My guess is Seattle's not in the running because I really think the NHL wants a team in there in the next 3 years.
I wouldn't be surprised by that one bit. I think if they go to Seattle, it may be a short-term thing, though. I think if they were to move there, it would just be a stopgap until they can get Calgary out of Abbotsford, because I think that's where they want to end
up. But I can see where the NHL has that on their protected list.
Right, and they say no.
Yeah, they don't want anything in there because when they move the NHL team in there, then they're going to upset their fan base, and you've got all new marketing and everything else, and I think they want that place left dormant other than the I don't even think the Thunderbirds are there anymore. So, but I think they want that left dormant until they can get a team in there.
Do you think Seattle would be an expansion team or Phoenix relocating?
Yeah, I think the NHL plans with the new realignment, I think they're putting two more teams in the West.
Seattle and Kansas City?
Possibly Kansas City. I'm not sure what else. I haven't thought about it. Vegas is still always, they want a team so bad down there, but everyone's afraid of the mob and the gambling. So that's why NFL, NBA, baseball, or the NHL won't go there. They'll put minor pro there, but they will not go with the big stuff. It's too much of a
risk.
Concern.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Peoria. It sounds like even if they do have an AHL team there next year, if the Canucks come to their senses and realize they're not going to get a sweetheart deal and they decide to operate in Peoria, it's probably just going to be a one-year stopgap. So Peoria long-term is looking at the ECHL. Now, the problem is the ECHL is interested, but so far there's no local ownership in place that wants to bring the ECHL there. Now, if they have more time, I'm sure they could. If the league really wants that market, they can drum up some interest somewhere, I'm sure. In the meantime, David Minion from the Peoria Journal-Star is also saying that the CHL is interested in the Peoria market, probably because they're interested in anything that yep. could even possibly support pro hockey. And they're potentially interested in putting a team there next season, 2013-14.
I believe it.
And I'm wondering if that might be the St. Charles Chill. If they're dead in the water in St. Charles...
And they take the ownership group
or right,
whatever
and move
else.
The ownership group to Peoria where there's a ready-made operation because there's all kinds of personnel already in place that they could just hire there, maybe that's an option. But long-term, I question the health of that. Is maybe it's a case of we join the CHL now as either St. Charles moving or an expansion team, and then we ramp up and join the ECHL in a couple years. Who knows? But it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Peoria. That's a good hockey market with 30 years of hockey history, and you got to think they're going to have a team long-term. It's just a matter of working out the kinks and figuring out how to recover from the Blues exiting town.
Yep.
And as for the Iceman affiliations, like I said, no news for next season yet. Coach Pyle continues to say that he prefers to have just one affiliate. So,
and you mentioned on the Asylum, one of the few rational thoughts in the past 3 weeks, but there's no chance we're hooking up with Columbus again. John Davidson is anti-ECHL. Not the ECHL itself, but in developing players down here. So
now, see, I mentioned that to Pyle.
Uh-huh.
And he said, don't close the book on that.
Really?
Yeah, because his thinking is, and I tend to agree with it now that you think about it this way, is the actual interaction between the NHL club and the ECHL club is relatively minimal. It's more about the relationship between the AHL club and the ECHL club. And things weren't bad between the Icemen and Springfield this year. That was a fairly stable relationship. We got some good players. Wade McLeod, Nathan Moon, Paul Dayton, and Trent Vogelhuber were all Springfield property.
Yeah.
They were not under contract for the Blue Jackets. So those are some good players we got out of that side of the deal because of Springfield. So it could be one of those cases where we don't technically affiliate with Columbus, but we would affiliate with Springfield, and by way of that, we would sort of be affiliated with Columbus?
Yeah, and that I can see. But from what we've talked about Davidson in the past, he's not going to be a part of it. He's not going to foot that bill. So, and I think things were bad enough with Peoria. I think that bridge is burnt, too, is my guess.
So that's the end of our silly season discussion. How long is this segment at? What are we at?
We're at 30 minutes.
Okay. You want to do an impromptu Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week?
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
I got one in mind. This is a short song, and this is in tribute, I guess, to the Houston Aeros moving to Iowa and our discussion about what is in Iowa or what's not in Iowa. We'll play a little tune by comedian Haywood Banks, another regular of the Bob and Tom Show. This is a song called Interstate 80, Iowa.
Mississippi River, Davenport. Corn, 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 corn. What's that smell? Corn, 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 Iowa City. Corn, 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 corn. Look, a tree. Corn, 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 corn. Corn, 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 corn. There's that smell again. Corn, 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 Council Bluffs.
Now Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley
and Daddy.
And we're back with a bonus Iceman Insight coverage. Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com. The Dirty D right here, 96.9, the music bomb. ECHL players to target. Don't worry, Coach Pyle. We're going to do all the heavy lifting for you. You just sign the checks.
Not only are we programming Brian Vall, we're now programming Jeff Pyle. That's the kind of stroke we have here, right?
Yes, indeed.
So the idea we came up with this was each of us would go through and we would find three forwards, two defensemen, and one goalie for each of us.
I wasn't planning on any forwards until you made me.
They have to be from an ECHL team, and they cannot be under NHL or AHL contract for next season.
I broke all three of those rules.
I'm not surprised one bit. And we have not seen each other's lists, although with all the rule-breaking you did, we probably won't have any crossover anyway.
I never said anything about the... I was looking at the CHL as well as the ECHL. Yeah, because I meant anyone minor pro, because I assume there's going to be some more CHL guys coming over to the E this year.
Fine with me. We'll see. We'll see if we do have any crossover despite that. So I'll let you go first, sir. Who's your first forward?
My very first forward, I think most people will recognize this name from the CHL and also this past year, Fort Wayne Comets. Eric Giosa, forward. 5'11", 182, hails from Northville, Michigan, which has a horse racing track, Northville Downs. So he's a fantastic player. I like him a lot. And there's a little bit of a horse racing kind of Ron Gary thing there. So that's who I'm going. Injured this year, did not play up to expectations. I think we can get him cheap.
That's probably true. I was thinking if you went with a Comet, you were going to go Brandon Marino, but are you assuming that he's just going to stay there?
Getting Brandon Marino.
That's what I was thinking, too. There were a few players that I came across that I was like, man, that would be really nice, but there's no way he's going to be available. So I just crossed guys off the list as a result of that, too. My first forward is another guy who people might recognize from the CHL and the ECHL. A forward, his name is Mike Ulrich.
No way!
Do you have him on
your list? That was my number two.
Mike Ulrich, 6'2", 200, an undrafted player. He was under contract with the Trenton Titans this season. It was his second pro season, and his rookie year was in the CHL with Tulsa, where he had 64 points in 66 games, which is, ironically, also where Dylan Clark spent his rookie season. Yep. And he also had 64 points in 66 games. They tied for the team lead. And because Trenton folded, Mike Ulrich is certainly up for grabs. All the players that were on that team at the end of the season that were ETHL property are free agents. So that's a guy that could be had. And perhaps knowing Dylan Clark, maybe that'll be a connection that could bring him here. Who's your next one other than a Mike Ulrich?
Yeah, my third is, now this guy was drafted by the Dallas Stars in the fifth round, but in 2007. Which was 6 years ago, so, and I couldn't find whether he was still under contract or not.
If it was 07, I'd guess he's probably not.
That's why I went with him. He is a right winger. He plays for the Idaho Steelhead. Okay. 27 goals this year. His name is Austin Smith, 5'11", 180, right-hand shot.
I looked at him, too. I didn't put him on my list, but I looked at him. My next forward is a forward named Tyler McNeely. 5'10", 175, another undrafted guy. He was with South Carolina this year. It was his second pro year. As a rookie in 2011-2012, he played for the Bridgeport Sound Tigers in the AHL. He had 21 points and was plus 9 in 66 games, which is not bad for a rookie in the AHL. And then this year he played for South Carolina. He had 44 points in 41 games, so over a point per game, and was plus 9.
I like it.
You don't have any more forwards.
No, I'm
since I stole one of yours. So I'll go on. My third forward is a kid named Nicholas Tremblay. 6 foot, 185. He was a sixth round pick in 08 for the Bruins. He was under contract to Bakersfield this year. It was his rookie year. He signed in January. It was a midseason signing. And in his first week with Bakersfield, he was ECHL Player of the Week as a rookie.
Yeah, impressive.
And he ended up the season, he had 29 points in 29 games and was plus 4 on a last place overall team. And after the season, actually I think it was before the season ended, he earned a call-up and he's currently playing in the AHL with the Providence Bruins, who are the affiliate of the Boston Bruins, but he's not actually under NHL contract anymore. So actually I don't know that he ever signed. I couldn't find any NHL contract info. It sounded like he was drafted by them but never signed a contract, so when he turned pro, he was a free agent to sign wherever he wanted. But he's found his way back to that organization now.
I stayed away from the west side of the ECHL. We did see some trades. We did, actually, the Evansville Icemen brought in one or two guys from the west side of the league. But
west side?
Yeah. It's the best side. But I really wonder about the logistics. And I also, that was a great stat, him being a plus player on that horrible team. But with them having two pretty crappy teams over there, I wonder if their statistics are a little bit inflated since they're only playing eight other teams. And
well, that's possible, but because he played for Bakersfield,
yeah,
he had one less crappy team to play. He was playing the good teams all the time. So I like the numbers. I like if you can be a point per game player and a plus player on a as a rookie on a last place team, you're worth a look as far as I'm concerned. So those are our forwards. We'll move on to our defense. Who's your first blue liner?
My first blue liner, I forgot to put down what team he is from. I think he played for Florida. He is a Florida Everblade, 31 games this year in the regular season, 3 goals, 17 assists. His name is Mike Retchuk. He is 5'10", 174, so he's more of the offensive-type defenseman. He's not the big boomer or anything like that. His second year in the ECHL with Florida, and he was drafted by the Philly Flyers in the second round, 42 overall, back in 2006. Ooh. So, and it's been my, for the most part, hockey experience that if someone has the last part of their name, Chuck, it usually end up being a really good hockey player, like Ilya Kovalchuk.
But that's Chuk, isn't it?
Well,
properly.
If by properly you mean in Canadian, yes, it is. Yes, Chuck.
Exactly.
And then, of course, Keith Tkachuk. Now, of course, there was Daniel Tkachuk. That first round pick didn't quite work out so well.
Back in the first Iceman season, we had Dan Kohanchuk.
Ooh,
yeah,
nice.
I like that.
I still have Canadian money that he paid me for a skate sharpening.
Really? Did he autograph it for you?
No. But yeah, Dale Howardchuk.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So
Hall of Famer.
Mike Retchuk is my puck moving defenseman that I targeted.
All right, you got the little defenseman. I got a big one. This is a guy who is 6'4", 220. He was a third round pick in 2008 of the Florida Panthers. His name is Adam Comrie. No relation to Mike.
Yeah.
he was with the Reading Royals this year. It was his third professional season. With Reading, he had 17 goals and 16 assists and 106 penalty minutes, and he was plus 22 in 45 games. He also had some time up in the AHL with Worcester, where he had 15 points and was plus 2 in 24 games. This is the kind of guy that might not be readily available. He was Reading's top-scoring defenseman. He's going to be in high demand, but I think that's the kind of guy you got to throw money at to try to lure him your way and build your blue line around. So that's a player I would really like to see. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would love to see it.
My next defenseman, I wanted one of those big guys too. His name is Brenton Stamler. He played for the Greenville Road Warriors this year, 34 games. Last year he played for Las Vegas in the ECHL as well. And we talked about the Seattle Thunderbirds, which is Canadian juniors on the West Coast, and he played for them for 4 years. He is 6'1", 203, and 4 goals, 2 assists this year, and 35 penalty minutes in 34 games. So just a shout-out there. And ironically enough, drafted in the 7th round, 214 overall in 2005 by the Detroit Red Wings.
Ooh, how about that? I got another big one. My second defenseman is a 6'4", 225, big boy. Yeah.
Beefy. Can he skate?
His name is Cody Brookwell. He was undrafted. He was with the Gwinnett Gladiators this year. It was his third pro season.
And you're thinking maybe a little...
I'm getting there.
Yeah, I was looking at that, too.
He was not a huge offensive threat. He had 18 points, which is decent, in 68 games. He was plus 14, which was fourth on the team.
18 points in 68 games is not decent.
For a defenseman.
No, it is not decent. He's a defensive defenseman, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
It's not his role.
Well, yes. Correct. He's not an offensive
defenseman. But I am correcting you. 18 points is horrible.
So, yes, the connection there is that his rookie season was in Gwinnett, and that was the last season that Jeff Pyle was the head coach there. So it's clear that Pyle liked him enough to bring him in as a rookie. So there could be a connection there that he could be a guy that Pyle might want to bring to Evansville to see him now that he's starting to flourish as a young veteran.
Yeah, I looked at some of those Gwinnett history as well. And a couple of guys I looked at, I thought, oh, man, I really like that. But they were older players in their 30s, which, you know, wouldn't be surprised. July 1st rolls around and a couple of these veterans end up from Gwinnett over to here. So
yeah, there were a couple of veterans I looked at, but I was trying to kind of keep mine as more young guys.
That's what I was looking for, too.
You could theoretically build around for seasons to come. So who's your goalie?
My goalie, since we kind of got lost in our ideas here, but he is actually playing in the CHL, Quad City Mallards. He played 35 games this year with 915 save percentage. His name is John Murray, 6'1", 197, butterfly-style goaltender. So a little bit on the bigger side. I like the bigger goalies. I like them just as backstops. Johnny Kells goes crazy. He likes the athletic goalies and blah, 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 and complain.
The ones
that
flop around like a slug.
Oh, yeah, the Dominic Hasek's, the Marty Brodeur's with their hybrid make-it-up style as you go. Yeah, those guys are rare.
Yeah. Yeah, to do that well.
I'm the flip, and he's a goalie, too. I'm the flip side. I just want to put a body back there, and I want no problems. I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to know anything. I just want you in the pose, you know, in the butterfly pose, glove high, stick down, and let things hit you, and I never even want to talk to you.
The problem is, though, as we've discussed, goalies are weird.
They're
always going to be a problem. It doesn't matter how good they are. They're just weird.
I don't mind weird. I have a problem with the problems. You can talk to the goal posts and everything else. I got no problem with that. But your POPLTA coming in worrying about your hair and you're too good for practice and stuff, then I got a problem.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, my goalie is from the ECHL. His name is Riley Gill, 6'1", 210. He was undrafted. He was with the Reading Royals, again, at the end of the season. This was his third pro season. In college, he was the all-time save percentage leader at Western Michigan, which is not a bad hockey school.
No, that one of my biggest bitternesses because I went to Central Michigan and that was our rival.
Ah.
And but we never even had we had a club hockey team.
Wait a minute.
You
went to college?
Yes, I did, twice.
Wow.
Yes, I did.
Best 14 years of your life.
Yeah, that's a whole other story. But yeah, Western has a great program. They play in the Frozen 16 every year, and they've put a lot of and talent into the NHL, including just recently David DeKaiser, who went to the Detroit Red Wings.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a solid hockey school. So to have an all-time record there says a lot. His first two professional seasons mostly were in Kalamazoo with the K-Wings, which isn't Kalamazoo where Western Michigan is? Mm-hmm. Or is that in, city, right?
Yep.
So he didn't have to go far when he turned pro. In Kalamazoo, he played 65 games plus 15 games in the playoffs. I think it was in his second year he led them to the conference finals. So he's got some playoff experience. He started this year in the SPHL with Louisiana. There he went 25-10-3, 5 shutouts, 243 goals against, 918 save percentage. And then because of how well he was playing there, he got a call-up. Reading signed him on February 27th. And all he did once he went to Reading was go 10-3-1 with 3 shutouts and check out these insane numbers. Goals against of 128, save percentage of 952.
Wow. How many times did they play Evansville in that stretch?
Only once or twice. I think we did see him once. And he is now starting for them, a number one seed, mind you, in the playoffs. So this is a kid that could very well be a star in the making. Yep. I would really like to see him. I also looked at one of Redding's other goalies from this season, Drew McIntyre.
Mm-hmm.
He's got similar numbers, played really well for them. And part of it may be a product of that's just a really good team. But he's played well enough that he actually got a late season signing. The Toronto Maple Leafs signed him, and he's now playing for the Marlies under contract to the Leafs. So that's a kid that could be going places too. But I went with Riley Gill just because I figured he's probably more likely to be available. It sounds to me like the Leafs like what they see out of McIntyre.
They
so
do.
They may lock him up.
They like him so much that another guy that we signed to a contract is now playing in the ECHL, and that's that Ouya kid that came in and played fantastic against Evansville Iceman. But
they've got goalies out the wazoo.
Yeah, all second, third, fourth round draft picks, and we've developed them. We've been very patient with them, and it's worked out. So
one other goalie I wanted to mention, and this kind of goes off the script, is this isn't part of our six guys, but one name that I think people should keep in mind when I was doing the research and looking at Gwinnett people, I found another guy that might be on Pyle's radar, a guy named Craig Kowalski. He's 5'8", 190, so a little guy, think Darren Pang kind of guy. He was an eighth-round pick back in 2000 of Carolina. He's played the last three seasons over in the UK in the EIHL.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, though, his first five professional seasons, he split between the ECHL and the AHL. His lowest save percentage in those 5 years was .905, and his best year was in 2007-2008. With Pyle in Gwinnett, where he had a .233 and .923 line. He went 29-11-2 and was an all-star. After that, he played 1 year in Italy and then the last three in the UK. This past season in the UK with Nottingham, he went 42-11-1 with a .207 goals against, a .918 save percentage, both of which led the league. Now, he's a little bit older.
Yeah,
but he has
37?
He has history. No, he's actually 32.
What year was he drafted? Oh, 2000.
Drafted in 2000, yeah. He's 32. He's originally from Detroit. He's got history with Pyle. He can still play. And I'm thinking goalies don't count against the veteran limit. It doesn't matter how many games a goalie has played. They don't count against the veteran limit. So you could bring him in as a veteran goalie without hurting your limit. He knows Pyle, and at his age, maybe he's ready to come home, quote-unquote, back to the States. So that might be a guy.
And even if he's not the number one, he can be the number two.
Right. You play a prospect goalie as your number one, and he is your number two. Now, granted, things obviously are going well for him over in the UK, so he may just want to stay there. But there comes a point in a guy's career where he's, I just don't want to play in Europe anymore. I'm ready to go home and be closer to home. So that might be a name to remember in the future. I would imagine that Pyle probably would have him at least on his radar as a backup plan if he can't find a better option elsewhere.
I like it.
So one thing I did want to mention or ask while we're talking goalies, we often use the term goaler instead of goalie.
Yep.
Can you explain that for those who don't know?
No, I can't. That's just what everyone's always said when I was born and raised in Detroit watching CBC before cable. So they always talk about the goaler. So
I was wondering if there was like a backstory about that, because I've heard it too. I grew up in Indy, and I heard men's league players there using it all the time. And I don't know where it comes from. I guess it's just a goofy kind of
goaler, just because they are goofy.
Winger, yeah. Chad Burley, winger, center, goaler.
Winger, center, goaler.
So then defenser?
No. The D.
The blue liner. There we go.
Blue liner.
Yeah.
So, well, and that just kind of goes with the whole most hockey guys' nicknames. The first thing you get is you just get a Y.
You get a Y or an or something.
If it works. Unless your name is, your last name's Campbell, then you get Soupy.
Yeah.
So, the way it is. Stevie.
Stevie Y.
Billy. Yep. That's the way it works.
All right. So, that's our players to target. We'll see if we end up, if we get one guy correct, I'm going to be ecstatic.
That would be awesome. It'd be a huge feather in our cap.
Yes.
So, Iceman Trivia.
Iceman Trivia. Your record is now down to 5-11. So
that is not down.
You are the Cleveland Browns of Iceman Trivia.
Do I have a higher win percentage than the Iceman had last season?
Oh, boy.
Maybe. Yes, I do.
It's right in the vicinity, I think. I don't know. I'd have to do the math.
Okay.
5-11 is not good, though.
We'll worry about if 18, there are some tough questions in
if
there.
If 18 points for a defenseman is not good, then 5-11 for Trivia is terrible. You got the last one incorrect, but this one is a little easier. I think you will get this, I think. We'll see. Not to put any pressure on you. Question is, who is the only goaltender in the five-year history of the Icemen who has won a playoff game with the team?
Oh, that's a good one. At first, you start thinking last year, but we got swept in the playoffs.
Correct.
So it goes back to the championship season, which was Big John Dorman.
Correct.
Yes.
Big Bad John. He was 7-2 during that AAHL championship run, and he's the only goalie that's ever won a game for the Icemen in the playoffs. The first aha.
I'm the only broadcaster that's broadcasted a championship in Iceman history as well.
You're the only broadcaster that's broadcasted a playoff win.
Oh, yeah. So, and I'm the only broadcaster that has broadcasted a game where a linesman got attacked by a player.
Very true. So, yeah, Dorman's
the and a cowbell. No one's done a cowbell.
Getting thrown out onto the ice. Yeah. Tap of the stick to Drew Campbell. Yeah, the first AHA season, we were swept in the first round. The first CHL season, we did not qualify. The second CHL season last year, yeah, we were swept in the first round. And then this year in the ECHL, we did not qualify. So,
I was thinking about John Dorman when you were talking about your goalie for the future possibility. And we moved to the CHL, and Crom had a couple of ex-Iceman players come in, and one was Johnny Dorman, and he released them, and the maniacs went crazy.
Lost their minds.
And just screaming, and this guy is, he just wants Muskegon players. He doesn't care about winning. He just wants his friends on the team, blah, blah, blah. And Johnny Dorman promptly went down to the SPHL, got shelled, and released. So
I don't know what he's doing now.
He retired.
Did he?
So, yeah, he's hanging out and still a great guy, but just how silly we can all be when we get emotionally wrapped up in these players and a coaching staff says, you are not good enough to play at this level, and we think it's a conspiracy against our Evansville history.
What is the fun of being a fan, a maniac, if you will, if you can't have irrational emotions?
Well, the only thing better than that is watching all the irrationalness exploding all over social media.
It's like people watching only online.
Yes. Indeed. Right. So, where are we? Ah! Brian Patafi, Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week. As we say every time, you can follow Iceman Athletic Trainer and weekly or semi-weekly amusement park guest Brian Patafi on Twitter. His handle is bpatafi. That's B-P-A-T-A-F-I-E. This week's tweet was directed at the NHL on Twitter. He said, quote, at this rate with all the outdoor games scheduled, your indoor games are going to be the Winter Classics. Hashtag too many.
Yeah.
Which brings me to our final topic for
today. Well, but before that, I'm just going to have to veto your tweet of the week because I understand what you're doing, making the show flow together. But the tweet of the week was, I took one of those little blue pills, and I can pee past my shoes now.
Wow.
I cannot believe you did not go with that one.
That's because the only testicles we want to talk about are Steven Rickards.
I didn't say anything about testicles.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. That was one of those screamers where I'm just sitting in the house doing dishes, whatever else. Family's doing the family stuff, and I check Twitter really quick, and I bust out laughing.
Yeah. Wow. What were we talking about?
Outdoor games.
Outdoor games, yes. There has not been an official announcement yet. I'm sure they'll make a big hullabaloo when they do. But ESPN and others have said that the NHL will be adding 5 more outdoor games after the Winter Classic next season. The Winter Classic will be Red Wings Maple Leafs at the Big House on New Year's Day, which is a makeup from this past season, which was lost to the lockout. After that, they will do the Kings and Ducks at Dodger Stadium on January 25th. Then the Rangers will play back-to-back games at Yankee Stadium on January 26th against the Devils and the 29th against the Islanders, which is actually the week leading up to the Super Bowl in New York, New Jersey. So they're trying to capitalize on all the buzz of what's going on in New York that week, I guess, and trying to really boost their presence in the area. And then the last two will be during Hockey Weekend Across America, which is the Blackhawks and Penguins will play at Soldier Field on March 1st. And then the day after that, the Heritage Classic returns in Canada on March 2nd. The Canucks and Ottawa will play at BC Place in Vancouver. For those who don't know, BC Place is the home of the BC Lions in the Canadian Football League and the Vancouver Whitecaps in the MLS. It also served as the Olympic Stadium during the 2010 Vancouver Olympics. Also, looking a little further ahead, there's already talk of doing Blues against either the Hawks or the Red Wings, although with realignment, the Hawks would probably be more likely at Busch Stadium in the season after that, the 2014-2015 season. And I, for one, would be there. That would be awesome to see a hockey game at Busch Stadium in St. Louis. There's a lot of debate about this. I think the pros, obviously, you get more total eyeballs for the sport. You generate more revenue. You can have more teams be featured in an outdoor game that probably wouldn't qualify for an a Winter Classic itself. But, of course, the biggest potential drawback is you dilute the Winter Classic in the process. I do think it helps that the Winter Classic is still going to be the first in the series.
And it's on January 1st.
And it's still on New Year's Day, so it will have the draw of that. But I'm on the fence. I understand the reasons for doing it, but I don't like that it could diminish what the Winter Classic has become. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, the Canadian media, they only wanted the first one. They never wanted to do it again. They wanted it every 5 years to do the outdoor classic.
Oh.
That one. I don't. Me, it doesn't bother me. I grew up playing on the ponds. I like it outdoors. I'm going to watch every one of them. So it's not going to water it down for me at all. I don't understand some of it, though. Why are you playing in California and not doing it next year on January 1st? You know, why is it all of a sudden this random, this one just pops up? So I liked it best. I would like to have the Outdoor Classic every year and Canada have their Canadian Classic. My other frustration, though, is how come St. Louis hasn't gotten one yet and how come Minnesota hasn't gotten one yet?
I agree.
Minnesota, I mean, everyone there, you skate to school,
right?
You know, and they can't get an outdoor classic. That just seems ridiculous.
Yeah, there should definitely be one in Minnesota, and maybe that'll be the case of the following season. Maybe if they do one in St. Louis with the Blackhawks, maybe they'll do Minnesota against, who knows, maybe the Blackhawks as well. I do think definitely St. Louis and Minnesota are consistently among the highest rated local markets for NHL TV. I mean, even on national broadcasts, St. Louis and Minneapolis tend to be like fourth or fifth after your Pittsburgh and your Buffalo. Well, no, Buffalo, I don't think they even rate that high because there's just not that many people there. But they're consistently strong TV markets, so you know they would draw well locally. The question is, how much of a national draw are they? And I think that's probably the problem is the Blues and the Wild, unfortunately, don't move the needle on a national level like your Blackhawks and Red Wings and Penguins and Capitals and blah, blah, blah.
Right, but that's why, going back to the watering down issue, that's why you play it on New Year's Day, because it's the only hockey game that you can see.
Exactly.
Or a college bowl game, so if you want actually something that's different than what you've watched for 2 weeks on ESPN, you can watch a hockey game, so you can put one of the smaller markets, and you can put a bigger market team with it, so with national appeal. And so... Yeah. And the same, I also think Tampa Bay, Dallas, not that they should get one, but they should be able to play in one. Why can't you put Dallas
team.
Play Minnesota for an outdoor classic?
You know, that would be interesting with the history of the North Stars moving to Dallas.
But no, let's just put the Rangers on again.
Yeah,
let's put Pittsburgh on again.
Yep.
So
same usual rotation. On the topic of this, though, I thought it would be worth a quick little discussion, too, is... Every now and then somebody posts the idea of, what if the Icemen did an outdoor game?
Actually, the history of that is our first season, the AHA season, I started a rumor.
You're the one that started it?
That we were going to play, that the Icemen were in contracts to play an outdoor game at Bossy Field. And I mentioned it, I was working at the pro shop at the time, mm-hmm. mentioned it to a couple of select people who were on the Iceman Maniacs message board page, and it took off like wildfire, and I would just sit in the pro shop and look at the comments and laugh.
Were you sitting there going, excellent?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be a very interesting venture. I don't think it would actually work best at Bossy Field, though. Not only is the building old, it's small. It only holds 5,200 people, and I think to make it worth it for the money, you have to be able to have more people there. So my proposal is, if it was to ever happen, do it at Wrights Bowl.
Yeah.
Not only is it there's newer facilities, it's just overall a better option. There's over 10,000 seats, so you could sell a lot more tickets and defray the costs. And also, the football stadium there, the way it's set up with all the seating on one side and one end, is perfect for a hockey rink. The sight lines would be excellent. It's got the stadium style seating where the seats go straight up more so than at Bossy Field, where it's a little more back. And I think it would be pretty cool to see a hockey game at Wrights Bowl. I don't know that it's ever going to happen. I just think the costs associated with it would probably outweigh any potential increase in revenue.
Yeah, there's no defraying the cost.
No. it's a case of, if it were to happen, and in the ECHL, Toledo's doing an outdoor game next year. probably going to be against Fort Wayne. They haven't said one way or the other. But Toledo's going to do one, and I wonder what the finances are of that. I wonder if the league is chipping in on the costs in order to help convince Toledo to do it, because you know they're not going to make money on it.
Well, Toledo does they have tried to do the past 2 years an outdoor tournament. Minnesota does an outdoor tournament. USA Hockey does. Mm-hmm. So, but Toledo's had to cancel it the last 2 years because of bad weather, too warm. So, but I think what I heard is it's a $3 million rig that the NHL uses to make the ice for the outdoor classic. So before any boards or anything, just the cooling system, that transportable cooling system, is $3 million.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
So,
especially the people that are worried about the Iceman not spending the money to put a winning team on the ice.
Yeah.
You can forget about a Winter Classic Evansville style. $3 million.
What about, don't know what the seating is, but Ellis Park and freezing it out there in the midfield and having the luxury box upstairs area and then, of course, just the outdoor seating. I think
the rink would have to be so far away from the stands. I don't know that would work, because the track itself is not wide enough.
That still happens when you do it at a baseball park.
True. I think it's going to be even farther, though, because not only do you have there's space between the stands and the rail where there's just ground level, and then you've got the dirt track, and then you've got the grass track.
But you could put it on top of the grass track. You might be able to put it right on top of the dirt track.
I don't think it's wide enough for a hockey rink.
No, I'm saying taking the railings down. You can go right across the dirt, across the grass track, and put it right there.
Yeah, that might work. It would depend on how flat you could make it, I guess.
They have bulldozers for that. They put a motorcycle race inside the Ford Center.
That's true.
Pretty sure they could figure out how to level Ellis Park and then put it back together afterwards.
That would be a way to generate income during the off-season.
That awesome penthouse up there for watching the horse races is fantastic.
It's really nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Sky Theater, I think, is what they call it.
And put the big-time bucks for a seat up there and then better ticket prices for sitting outdoors. Mm-hmm. I think it would look really cool.
It would look cool. But and that would, you wouldn't have to worry about renting the facility because Ron Geary already owns it.
That's right.
But I still think, overall, for the spectacle and the sight lines, I think Wright's Bowl would be the ideal spot. But it would probably be more expensive to do it there.
Yeah. Well,
maybe not. You wouldn't have to pay to flatten it out because you've already got a ready-made flat.
Well, it's not flat. It's crowned.
That's true, yeah, for drainage.
Yep.
But you could level it off relatively easily, I would think.
It's all speculation. Yeah, so it would be.
It's never going to happen.
It would be cool.
It would be awesome, but it's never going to happen.
Nope. You need to Photoshop it or something like that, or just put it as a background.
I'm not that talented.
Yeah, neither am I.
Maybe I should work. Dixie's a graphic designer. Maybe I should work with her. That'll be my April Fool's joke next year.
Ooh.
And we'll see how many people actually pay attention to this show.
Get a Steinhaus photo and impose it into Bossy Field or something like that, or the bowl.
All right, Dixie.
Yep, Wendy. Get it going. It's Mrs. H.
Mrs. H, yes. Dixie Halber.
Jack. Just Dixie
yes,
Jack.
Yes, that too.
All right, are we freaking done?
Yeah. Our next show is in 2 weeks.
Yes.
May 15th, or actually, by now, it's about a week and a half, isn't it? I think by the time, as long as this show has gone.
It's 2 weeks.
I don't know. I think it's only about a week and a half.
Oh, geez. Gone so long. Friday already? I got to go right into Populux.
Yeah. Yeah, stay tuned. In 20 minutes, Populux will be.
Derek's midnight on Eastern time.
Derek's going to go lubricate the voice box a little bit and then.
Single entendre.
I wasn't even thinking that. You dirty mind. Yeah, Here Come the Mummies have a song called Dirty Minds.
Hey, I got to move my car before I get a parking ticket.
Well, that's what you get for parking in a six-hour parking spot.
Yes.
You should know that's not long enough for this show.
Yes. May 15th, 2 weeks. We have no idea what we're going to talk about.
We'll come up with something.
Yep.
We did, an hour and a half or more than that this week, so we'll come up with something.
We just surely will.
What, playoff updates and other nonsense?
He is Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans, IcemanManiacs.com. Dirty D, thanks for spending 2.5 days with us. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.